This show is sponsored by MyOliveLeaf.biz, MyOliveLeaf.biz, and The Hurricane Report, merchandise, and more.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
Good afternoon. We're coming on the air now with breaking news in the killing of George Floyd, who died on Memorial Day. There you see him right there. His death. After being held by officers, you see them right there. Four officers there in Minneapolis. His cries, "I can't breathe," sparking protests across the country over the last 9 days. And now the Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison has announced that charges will be filed against all four officers. Derek Chauvin had been charged with second-degree manslaughter and third-degree murder. Now he's being charged with second-degree murder. The other two officers you saw right there who were also holding down George Floyd are also being charged with aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter and murder. That's Thomas Lane and Alexander Kong. And To Tao, the fourth officer there standing to the left, will also be charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter. I want to go to Alex Perez on the scene there in Minneapolis. We're expecting to hear from the Attorney General, Alex, within the hour.
Yeah, that's right, George. These upgraded charges against Officer Derek Chauvin and the charges against the other three officers are what protesters, thousands of protesters, and the family of George Floyd have been demanding for the last week. In the court of public opinion, it seems they wanted these charges a long time ago. Now the court of law catching up with them, charging these officers. The family had been demanding for first-degree charges, but the attorney general has said multiple times first-degree murder charges in this case is very difficult to prosecute. He has said several times that he was reviewing all of the evidence and going to upgrade the charges to the place that he felt would be best able to prosecute in a court of law. And now we're seeing that that officer, Officer Derek Chauvin, the officer seen with his knee on George Floyd for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, now charged with second degree murder. Those other officers charged for their roles. They're seen in that video. Two of those officers you can see in the video with their knees also on George Floyd's back. Now, according to the autopsy that was performed by the family, those doctors said that they believe those officers that had their knees on his back also impacted his breathing, and they believe that that led and caused his death.
Joined on the phone now by Benjamin Crump, the lawyer for the Floyd family. Mr. Crump, thank you for joining us. Your reaction to these new charges?
Well, the reaction is the family is relieved, George, that Attorney General Keith Ellison worked expeditiously to make sure these officers would be arrested before they begin to memorialize George Floyd tomorrow here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And they are thankful to all the people who use their voices to demand equal justice.
And how is the Floyd family doing now, Mr. Crump?
They're doing as well as can be expected, considering that they're preparing to lay George to rest, even though they never could have imagined that he would die such a horrible death, George. It is, you couldn't in your worst nightmare imagine that your loved one would die at the hands of the police, the people who have sworn to protect and serve him, with their knee on his neck and two knees in his back, where he was starving for air, and he begged them, telling them, "I can't breathe," and they offered him no humanity. So as our pathologist, independent pathologist, Dr. Michael Bodden and Dr. Alicia Wilson concluded, Joyce died from mechanical asphyxiation. He was starving for air. He needed a breath.
Radio, DJ.
One nation, one station.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to invite, I just opened up judges, Mike, 323-646, 323-646. Welcome, Judge Jabrown.
Well, greetings, everybody.
Hi. Judge, wait 1 second. Judge, you're on the line with Dr. Inky Bishop and Reese.
Oh,
I already got that.
An interesting situation. You always have the option of choosing the circumstances of your death if you try hard enough. Sometimes it comes upon you by accident. Most of the time it does not. That said, I ran a Boy Scout troop for 12, 15 years, was involved involved with the Boy Scouts, and they had a motto that applies to everybody, or should. Black people don't seem to understand it. It's called Be Prepared. Now, I'm the oldest person in on this conversation. I don't feel that way. I feel like I'm about 35, but I'm more than twice that. However, I would say things are nowhere near as bad now as they used to be or as they were for my parents when it came to, let alone my grandparents, when it came to racism. I'm looking at some lightweight stuff going on right now that reminds me of what was happening outside of the civil rights thing about 1962, which was dead by 1964, and it got replaced by militancy. Also, what are you looking at when you look at the video? There are very few people that realize what they're looking at. Everybody you are likely to talk to will tell you the officer kneeling on the man's neck killed him. He didn't. It was the one that came along and added his weight to his back that killed him. What the one that was doing, who was apparently kneeling on his neck, was using a technique known to enough, which is you put pressure on one side of the neck with the knee, you compress the carotid artery. It does not render the person unconscious. They get enough oxygen to the brain to survive. But what it does is it diminishes their capacity to resist. You can hold it for a fairly long time. However, when the person was put in that position, you notice in some of the video coverage, some big cop coming along and putting his knee in the man's back. Now, the man was compromised on purpose, but not lethally, by the neck pressure. The one that comes and puts his knee in his back is the one that keeps him from being able to breathe, killed him from a martial arts perspective. I've been taking it for 55 years, and chokeholds became the rage about 40 years ago, until too many people got killed because the cops got excited. They put the hold on somebody, and you're supposed to start counting to yourself when you get the hold in place. And after 15, 20 seconds, you let it go because the person has been rendered unconscious at about 15 seconds. At 10, he's lost his vision and a lot of the ability to act in a coordinated fashion. So when you release it after 15 to 20 seconds, he kind of dances around unconscious on the floor as he regains consciousness, because the carotid sinus at the base of the brain causes the brain to keep the body trying to breathe, to get oxygen. If you do it too much longer, then what happens is you cause brain damage that can quickly lead to a fatality. And cops would, with the adrenaline flowing, forget to count. And you get this thing when you got pumped full of adrenaline where time seems to slow down. Perhaps that's because your reflexes are picking up. And they tend to hold it too long. So they don't recommend that anymore. That's not hard to do. You don't have to literally choke somebody out, like if you were going to kill them by garroting them so you cut off their ability to breathe. You simply apply to the brain, and in 10 seconds they're going to lose vision, and in 15 they'll faint. Now, I could probably do it to you, Miss Valerie, just with one hand, with using two fingers, and you would start feeling woozy very quickly and collapse. And I wouldn't have even put a mark on your neck, and you can still keep breathing, but you get no oxygen to your brain. It's all a matter of technique. So the one that I am looking at in the video is not the one with his knee on the guy's neck. He could have kept it on there for another 10 minutes, and the guy wouldn't have died. It was the one that put his knee on his back that probably killed him. But see, that's ignorance, because nobody knows these things. it's part of the set of skills that you can acquire as the planetary apex predator, because it's there. And too many people think of humans as being so weak, defenseless, and everything else without weapons, but we are not, because if you do the homework and do the practice, you can easily kill somebody with your hands, you included, Ms. Valerie. Any human with the sufficient practice can kill another human with his bare hands, though there is this thing, women might be hard put to do it to a large or a strong man, that might be impossible. But generally, people can kill each other with knowledge and practice without weapons. So when you see somebody walk into a crowded room with these skills, it always strikes me as a little funny that the people in there might be off on the far left hollering about, get the guns out of everyone's hand, people can kill. Well, some other people can kill you without a weapon at all, so what are you going to do about them? Hold on, hold on. Let me put one caveat in this whole mix. 10 years ago, some people had smartphones that had video functions. Most people did not. Nowadays, damn near everybody has a video function on their cell phone. And you are seeing a lot of things that happened in the past that nobody recorded. So many, many other instances of what you saw on that video probably happened on the same day or the same week. You just don't know about it because somebody wasn't there enterprising enough to have hooked his cell phone up to the video function so he could get to it quickly. I see that all the time. If you're out with me, people are always walking up, Judge, could I take a picture? Yeah, come on, take a picture. And then I jokingly say, now don't stand there 5 minutes trying to figure out how to use it. You know, Urban Living 101A, learn how to use the video function or the camera function of your cell phone. And people will fumble. So a lot of things are not recovered or recorded because people can't get to videoing that quickly before the moment passes, or they get caught up in what they're looking at and they don't do it. So typically it's somebody who is used to going around videoing everything. I hate that kind because it's like I'll be in a restaurant or something. Hey, if you want a picture, don't try to sneak it over somebody's shoulder. Just come up and ask. Okay, that's rude. Come on over, you can have one. No. Now, Denzel, they've got a video with Denzel Washington in it that's out now. He was driving down the street, and LAPD was doing their thing on a homeless guy, so Denzel intervened so nothing happened. They recognized him, so they backed off. You know, that's what you are supposed to do when you've got status and authority, or apparent authority, or at least you're known. See, part of
Judge, the only reason I asked is you said that the person who probably caused the fatality, caused him to die, was the person who was midsection, the person who had his knee on his back, but he wasn't charged.
Yeah, but
the actual guy who was profiled in the video.
Yeah, but you see, that's why you have a thing called a trial, where you have under oath testimony, and see when you get the medical examiner up on the stand, he's going to have to be qualified as an expert. The jury will be instructed that they may accept his testimony and opinion. They may reject it in part, accept it in part, or reject it altogether. It is only an opinion, but sometimes it is the best or the only way to arrive at a conclusion as to what happened. See, we don't pay attention to these things when you look at the news accounts. And when they come in there and they start talking about the cause of death, somebody's going to closely cross-examine him about that. And he may not be able to establish that that is the cause of death, meaning occlusion of the carotid artery. He was only occluding one of them. So there is that. But you see, here's the other thing, too. It's called... He didn't do nothing. He was just sitting in the car when they were robbing the place. He didn't do, yeah, he did. Jesse James and the gang are holding up a bank. three of them go in with their 45s out or 44s. Two of them are lookouts on the outside watching the horses, and one of them's down the street to clear the way. All of them will hang if they get caught. Murder in the third degree, which in most states would be voluntary manslaughter or criminally negligent homicides. Now, when it comes to us being fearful, if you've been a good citizen and you have no criminal record, you are not under any restriction from a court due to some kind of domestic situation, or you've not been convicted of domestic violence, in 42 of the 50 states, you have a right to purchase a weapon. As long as that is the situation without anybody's discretion, in those same 42 states, you can get a carry permit on a shall issue basis. In other words, you get the weapon of an approved type in some states. In other words, they don't want you with trash. It's likely to go off if you drop it. You go through the course that they have so you can at least get the legal fundamentals, and you can show that you can generally shoot downrange without shooting somebody else in the process. And then you go typically in a lot of states to the Department of Motor Vehicles, and they issue the carry permit through the DMV, and they use the same picture they use for your driver's license, and it is referenced to your driver's license. That's in a lot of states. So go get yourself some bang instead of some damn bling. You might try a SIG 320 or a 365 or a Glock 19 in 9mm and get your stuff together. They're under $500. Lay off the gold chains and the damn Air Jordans. Get them. Get yourself some ammunition. Go practice. Learn what you're doing. Get your carry permit. At least you'll be prepared for an eventuality.
That's right. Let me ask you this, Judge, because I'm definitely in full agreement with what you're saying in terms of, I think that people forget that we're animals and we still live in the jungle. Like, it's still law of the jungle. But let me ask you this. What do you think about the seven people that got shot in I think it was Louisville, where they are also rioting. Then there was a cop that got shot in Ohio. A cop got shot in Ohio because they rioting in Ohio also. And some of this stuff is kind of like getting swept under the rug, not necessarily because people aren't paying attention. It's just that there's so much attention being directed towards the George Floyd issue, some other cities.
Yeah, that's a big issue. Now, let me say this. It's a negative example, but it explains what you're talking about. The Texas Rangers killed more Buffalo soldiers than the Native Americans did in the frontier wars. Fact. The Texas Rangers had a saying, one riot, one ranger. Instructions, go in and shoot everybody. There have been countless white people gunned down during riots. Look at Kent State. You know, no black historical colleges or institutions suffered the death toll at Kent State with those National Guardsmen armed with M1 Garand rifles opened up on the crowd at Kent State in Ohio and a university campus and killed those students and wounded many more. So it isn't just black folk get victimized. There is a tradition, a history, and a great body of law in America about the application of violence to riotous conditions. By the way, you have a writ of habeas corpus that shall not be suspended except upon invasion or insurrection. And then you can suspend the right of habeas corpus, which is the fundamental right that keeps everybody acting right as well as you can get it. So riots are off the books. When a riot goes down, you can use deadly force summarily under most law in the country. When a riot goes down, that's a classic example of the breach of public peace, dignity, and order. If an individual does something like that, then what happens is he is indicted. It says on or about such and such date, John Doe did against the public peace, dignity, and order of the state of X or of the United States of America allegedly commit the following offense. But when you have a group, that's like a conspiracy. This group dynamic is viewed as so dangerous, whether it is a conspiracy or it is a riot or it is a mob, that these rights get suspended to an extent. And then violence becomes the necessary adjunct. If they declare martial law, we've all heard that because most of us have been alive when that has been declared. Most recently, for most people, was in Los Angeles, California in 1992 after the Rodney King thing. Personally, Los Angeles, California, 1965, when a whole division of National Guard came in there. And the bottom line was, halt or you get shot. See, that's the way it works.
We're 3 minutes from the second hour, so versus taking a commercial break, I'd just like to continue the conversation. So I just wanted to let everybody
sure
know that they are listening to the Judge Joe Brown Show. I am Valerie Denise Jones, 929-477-1167. I'm officially introducing the second hour. And if we could, for editing purposes, please, if you insert something into the conversation, please complete that conversation before shifting gears, because it makes it very hard for me to edit. So it's 4:58 now. Please continue.
Hey, everybody, join in.
Reese, do you have anything you'd like to say to Judge Brown? I don't know if you've had a chance to have a discussion.
Yeah, no,
with him.
Judge, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show, and it's a pleasure to speak with you and to hear you speak online, and I've listened to you.
Glad to have you. Now, you go
Thank
ahead
you,
and continue with what you think you want to add to the
well,
mix,
you
or
very,
change
very,
the subject if you want to.
No. You make a very, very strong and valid point about the probably the biggest ignorance, if you will, within the black community is... And I believe that the first problem is the idea within black community that the Constitution does not apply to them. And if that is your purview, if you will, of the Constitution, then therefore you will not use its limits to your advantage. When you were talking about the Second Amendment, that is, you know, to me, the pinnacle. It's because if you're under the guise that that doesn't apply to you, the right to bear arms doesn't apply to you, that that is the other man's, you know, rights, if you will, you're already setting yourself aback, which is has always been a problem to me because, again, you know, if you cannot arm yourself against tyranny, then you are asking for tyranny to come to your doorstep. Ideology, and I believe that it's a very liberal construct that has sort of force-fed the idea in African-Americans' heads that they should not bear arms by forcing the idea of gun control into their ideology or maybe in their indoctrination in the schools, that guns are only to be used by cops, hunters, and killers. And when you have that ingrained into African-Americans, that becomes, in essence, what it is that they believe and what they know. Because I believe that, you know, there's a saying that I use all the time. Belief is for people who lack knowledge. Because you can believe anything and know nothing. And that's, you know, if you believe that you're not supposed to have the right to a gun, you will live that lifestyle and you will never, ever protect yourself. And you will almost think that you are not even worthy of having that protection for you and your family. So I always find that interesting that, you know, when you brought that up, it's like it's something I've been preaching for over 20 years. And no matter what, it never, ever seems to stick within the African-American community because we have to have the right to protect ourselves, not just to bear arms, but we have earned the right to ourselves as American citizens, not as black people, as American citizens, because that is indeed what we are, American citizens.
You know what? Black people have been charged and acquitted of killing white people and white cops. Tennessee has a classic case where the man was mistaken, but he was found not guilty by the state Supreme Court and the charges dismissed. There was a riot going on in Tennessee, and this guy was a homeowner, and he stepped out on his front porch with a shotgun to indicate nobody was coming up in his house when this riot was going on. There was an undercover cop who reached suddenly under his coat as though to go for a gun, and the homeowner shot him to death. He was charged with murder, but the defense he used was held by the state Supreme Court to apply to the facts that were unequivocal. He found that the man was acting like he was going to kill him, so he acted first and killed the man. He was mistaken, but he was honest in his mistake that the man was doing him harm, not a cop. So a black man got a call for killing a cop. That happens. Tennessee is where the law came about from a 1974 situation where a guy was running away from the police. He got caught at the top of a fence, and the cop walked up behind him at the fence and calmly shot him in the back and killed him. That resulted in the Supreme Court saying you cannot just come up and shoot somebody. You have to have a legitimate fear that the individual is going to do you death or serious bodily harm, or to some third person if you don't act. Now, see, these things happen. So you said it right, my good brother. That is exactly the consideration that ought to be in people's heads.
Well, I have a question for both of you guys, for Reese and for Judge Joe Brown. So here's my question, right? And I just want to throw a few things out there that may or may not be 1,000% accurate, but they're being reported. They're saying that the Derek Chauvin, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, right? Derek Chauvin, the cop that killed George Floyd, or at least the one with his knee on his neck, right? He's being represented by Tom Kelly, who's the same attorney that got Geronimo Yanez acquitted. Geronimo Yanez is the guy that killed Philando Castile. He was also put on leave, Derek Chauvin, in 2011 for inappropriate police shooting of an Alaskan Native American named Leroy Martinez. He also shot Ira Latrell Toles, an unarmed black man, 21 years old, in 2008. He also was one of the officers that gunned down Wayne Reyes, who was a Latino man, with 16 bullets into him. Chauvin and another officer were chasing a car in 2005. That car chase caused the death of three people. And up to date, there's been a total of 12 police brutality complaints against Chauvin and all of the complaints are basically listed as no discipline. So if those are all correct, I think the problem is then who's responsible for allowing somebody that is constantly being caught in these situations? Because if, like listening to what you were saying about the guy with the knee on his back, if this is his first time, Derek, if this is Derek Chauvin's first time caught in a scenario like this, I think people would be more apt to give benefit of the doubt and say, well, maybe he didn't intend harm, et cetera, et cetera. But when you have a record where you are constantly, it seems like almost every year or every other year, you're in you're in the mix of either killing a unarmed minority, whether they Native American, Latino, black, yourself, or in tandem with a group of others. Like, how does that happen? How do you, this one single officer, how does he keep being a key participant in these kind of things when we know there are thousands of officers in Minnesota? Like, how does this guy keep finding himself to the murder or the killing of an unarmed minority? And how does he keep getting back out to the street to keep patrolling afterwards?
Judge, please answer that, and then also please tell us the difference between when Judge, when you answer this, please also address the fact that he's in charge with the third degree, that versus first degree.
Judge, if I may, I'll go first. Because I'll try to be, brevity is the soul of wit, if I may.
Well, you can stay afterwards if you want, but go ahead, and I'm glad you're here. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
Take your time.
Okay, so there's a huge disparity when issues like this take place, from cities in Ferguson to Ohio to, Sanford, Florida. There are certain issues that people need to understand, and one of the biggest things, I'm from New York, born and raised, and one of the biggest issues I've ever had when it came to the police department, and not to say that anything about cops, just the department, the issues that I've always had with the department is their ability as a public worker union. And what they have in these unions are protections. And these protections, which are very, very strict, as far as, in to protect the cops, these things that you see in this particular officer's case is that no matter what the issue is that involves this cop, he has protections to keep him in place. And I have studied this over years and years and years, and it always seems to happen in places that are, for some odd reason, that are pro-cop for political reasons. Okay? Prosecutors work with police officers. Police officers work with prosecutors. This has always been sort of that union of sorts. And when you are protecting that union, more than likely you're going to get a degree of corruption. And that is, no matter what it is that this police officer does, and it happens within the teachers' union, where you have these disparaging things that happen with an individual and they are protected with these union guidelines that make sure that it is incredibly hard to fire somebody no matter what the issue is, where they will find a way for them to be protected or find some sort of systematic way to keep that individual from being fired. Probably he'll be demoted, maybe he'll be put on desk duty, maybe he'll be suspended. But the objective is always to protect the police officer, because the prosecutor believes that if the police department loses faith in them, then the police department will not work with them in order to get convictions. Now, Judge Joe Brown, I know that you know this better than I do, but if I've said anything that is out of sorts, please correct me.
Amen on what you said. I don't have any problems with a thing you said. You put it very wisely, very succinctly. And better than I could. So there you go. I have no problem. And the judge is impressed by arguments of counsel, his statements, remarks, and arguments in setting a perspective for the matters that are now at hand.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Judge.
You know, this, you're right on point, sir. See, one thing is we need to wake up. We were awake. We got a kick in the teeth by so many of our organizations 50 years ago being infiltrated by agents, snitches, and others who were trying to bring us down, and so many people that we called pimping the revolution or the movement, or people who wanted the association with doing something, but actually were too scared to do anything with it. I mean, it's bad, but you see, we had 50 years of glorification of dysfunction, and now the obvious contradictions that were always there that never got resolved are now getting brought out because the press has, for its purposes, found that 24/7 news gets boring unless you can come up with some excitement. And this is excitement from their perspective. Keeps people in a posture of stay tuned for the latest developments, and it's good for commercial ratings and money. So everybody's running with it. But we need to wake up, and there are some necessities that we need to take care of. There are some attitudes that need to be adjusted, and a reality that you can't get anything permanently in your pocket. If it's given to you, you have to take it, not accept it. You have to say, that's mine, I'm going to seize it. What is happening to us is a classic example of a lack of political control and political accountability. We don't control the politics that concern us, and those that we do vote for, support, and give contributions to do not do what they ought to represent our interest. So,
in a nutshell,
you sort of encapsulated all of the above and the adjuncts and the peripheral issues. Very good.
Question would then be, where is the limit? And how do outside entities come in to oversee the limitations on, because I get it that, you know, you do need union protection to protect workers from being, you know, losing their job, et cetera, but there's got to be some limit to the point where you can't keep being the center of this kind of thing. Every single time, it's you. It's either you alone or you and others. And you know, at some point, where there's smoke, there's fire. So there has to be a limit to this kind of thing where you can't continue to be like the union just keeps getting you back in, and people are looking the other way.
There's an answer to that, and I think a key part of that is, you always have to go to the source of what's creating the corruption. And remember what I said about the unholy union of the prosecutors with the police department. Remember, prosecutors got nothing to go on unless the police department is bringing them a case to prosecute, right? But the prosecutor, he has what's considered to him, what's the value in convictions? It's a resume builder. See, there's supposed to be a rule of law in which the prosecutor is supposed to find and look for justice, no matter where it may lead him, even if the person being prosecuted is found to be innocent. The job of the prosecutor is to find all of the information, even if it leads in the opposite direction of prosecution. But that is
okay,
not
now,
been.
No, I was just going to say, on that note right there, why is Chauvin being charged with third-degree murder instead of first-degree?
And we'll get to that. We'll get to that because I have an answer for that. What I'm saying to you is this. We have to get – the prosecutor is looking for a resume builder, okay? It's a resume builder, which is why the objective of a prosecutor is to get a conviction. I'm going to go to an old story, and I'll try to be real brief. Her name was Angela, and I forget her last name, but she was the prosecutor in the George Zimmerman case in the shooting of Trayvon Martin. She got on the stage and she gave the press conference when they arrested George Zimmerman and they charged him with second-degree murder, I believe it was. And what that prosecutor said when she got on the stage, she should have been disbarred for this line. We are going to get justice for Trayvon Martin. That is not a prosecutor's job. A prosecutor's job is not to prosecute a case based upon one side of the political...
Right, because that demonstrates bias. Yeah,
that demonstrates bias. No prosecutor. Yes. Closer. We are going to try this case. We're going to get to the facts wherever they may lead is a good answer by a prosecutor. But if a prosecutor says we're going to get justice for a particular individual, there's a bias right there.
No,
but
when it happened, I thought about that too. I said that must have been a social media moment right there. She put that in there
for
promo purposes.
And Mosby in Baltimore in the Freddie Gray case, she made that same claim. On the stage. As soon as both of those women made those claims live on television, I knew what was going to happen. There'd be absolute acquittal. I knew it was going to happen. Because once you show that bias, that means you're not looking for justice. You're looking for something to throw onto your resume. You're looking for something that's going to get you in the papers and get you on the talk shows and make you a politician or an icon. And that's
okay,
where that problem lies.
Are you attributing those acquittals to those statements? Are you saying that not even to those statements, but are you saying those two acquittals were more about the lawyers dropping the ball?
Yeah.
First of all,
yes, that's exactly what they did. They dropped
the
ball.
She made it a racial issue. She made it a racial issue, but she failed to mention that three of the officers in the Freddie Gray case were black. You can't make it a racial issue then. But she was driving that home because she knew that was the animus in which the public had. She was really trying the case in the court of public opinion instead of doing her job. That's why the case completely fell apart. And what did Baltimore do to save face? They gave Freddie Gray's family $7 million just so somebody felt like, you know, at least we gave you some sort of justice, because we couldn't get a conviction at all because there was no conviction to be had. And the same thing with George Zimmerman. Going out there biasing the case in any particular way was the wrong move. But you have to look at it this way. Those two cases are ones that we know. We know, no matter where you look, prosecutors' jobs today is to build their resume for the next gig, the next tier up. Whether or not they're going to be the mayor of a city, a local senator, or whatever it is, it's a resume builder. It's not about justice. It's now the criminal justice business, not the criminal justice system.
Okay. Well, here, you're exactly right. And let's say something that I have noticed in the 50 years I've been involved in law. At one point, everybody was into the law as a thing, as a philosophy, right? It was a set of guidelines, and people dealt with what are the logical effects of applying these guidelines to what appear to be the facts of the case. That was one thing. And you got right-wing types, left-wing types on the bench who were sticklers about applying the law. Sometimes the right was better at it than the left. Somewhere between back then and now, it has switched over to matters of belief. I don't abide by what he wants, but I respect his beliefs. That's because this religious thing has gotten to be too big a part of the picture, because religion has fallen and secular things have taken the place of the religion. It sounds esoteric, but too much of what goes on in law is now predicated upon a belief. Damn your belief, leave them at the door, go in and apply the rules. The beliefs have nothing to do with these rules because the beliefs are protected by the rules, and if you allow the interjection of the beliefs, then what happens is that they will fall because somebody will simply flip the two-edged sword and cut backwards. Now, that is what's going on. I say the most dishonest crowd of people you can ever find are career prosecutors. They've been used to exhibiting too much power for too long without any accountability. We lose control of the system when we ignore it and do not pay attention to the issues and start relying on social media and popularity contests as to who we vote for and hand out ballots that people we trust hand to us at the polls, and we go in and vote for people we've never heard of, but they're on those ballots. And we get some profoundly incompetent types sitting on the bench who get selected for their beliefs, not their fluency with the law. Not their fluency with the law, but how their fluency with a part of the law facilitates somebody's belief. I don't want some SOB on the bench who's got a belief he's pushing. I want him to be mechanical, understanding human nature, and dealing with the law and having experience in life. And you've got too many judges that lack experience in life, lack experience in the practice of law, and too many damn lawyers in the practice of law is a business and not as a profession. It makes a difference. And also who have no damn balls. I have talked to some of these lawyers involved in some of these cases, and they don't even know what the law is. For example, one somebody was talking about, we've got to get rid of this stand your ground. I said, why is that, counselor? My client, dead client, blah, 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 blah. I said, but client, counselor, don't you realize that the person that had the right to stand his ground was your dead client, not the defendant in this case? Huh? Oh, he didn't know. Are we all that dialogue and no lawyers speaking out about this nonsense of castle doctrine? Castle doctrine only applies when somebody's inside somebody's home or on their property, not standing on a sidewalk. No retreat. We got to change this no retreat. There are only 8 states that have ever had a retreat rule, and it gets stupid because you get cases where you got grandmama mama, some children, and husband standing there, and somebody tries to hold them up, and hubby's supposed to turn and run and leave grandmama, the children, and the wife there. So you got inane and stupid jury instructions that say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the defendant was required to retreat or withdraw before he acted in defense of self and others. However, if you find that the defendant made any motion as though to withdraw, such as raising a heel as though to shift balance, that suffice. That's ridiculous, because the damn fools that came up with that you had to retreat have no understanding of what it is to be a live human on the planet Earth. And they're off into belief. See, that's what corrupts this system, is somebody's belief. Now, aside from people being racist slave owners who participated in coming up with these rules, they are not bad rules. But what they attempted to do is insulate the rules of this game from somebody's damn belief. You see, so we have put that back in because nobody pays attention. The educational system has collapsed. We do not train children as vigorously as they were 55, 60 years ago. You see, stuff that people ask right now in COVID-19 and stuff like that, you ought to have found out by the time you were in the fifth grade, but they don't even teach it in college now. So, I mean, it's, you've dumbed down the republic. You've dumbed down our damn community. It's, we think in terms of a paradigm where it's always gimme, 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 gimme. Let me see what I can run a con game so somebody will give it to me. It's what you earn. And you got to earn a place as a citizen by what you do. It means you have to be willing to die to be free. And if you're not, then you don't need to be free. You're somebody's damn slave because they can intimidate you.
Okay, well, with that being said, here's the thing. We kind of come to you for your expertise
Hold one second, Dr. Inky. Guys, please be mindful of the time. We have about 20 more minutes, and we do have to address the fact that this person was charged and is in custody, and we have to break down his charges and also include the fact that this is excessive force, and possibly talk about the autopsy. And I'd also like to include two more callers into the conversation.
Let me add something to this. A new piece of news. A new report from a local nightclub owner in Minneapolis claims that George Floyd, the black man who died earlier this week while being detained by a white police officer, Derek Chauvin, worked together at his El Nuevo Rodeo Club. Now, put that in the mix.
Wait, I think that new piece of news actually plays into the main question, which is when you're looking at third-degree murder, right? We know third-degree murder is manslaughter. We know that first-degree and second-degree murder are intentional, so we know that third-degree murder is manslaughter. We know first-degree and second-degree are intentional murders where you actually set out to murder somebody. But first-degree murder is premeditated, where second-degree is not. So although we may have the basics as John Q. Public, what does that actually mean, and how do these charges really, like, play out?
It's intent. First-degree murder is one thing. Second-degree murder, all murders except first-degree murders are generally second-degree without certain circumstances. Second-degree murder by common law is defined as a murder, as a killing in the heat of passion sufficient to cause the defendant to act in an irrational fashion. Manslaughter was defined as an intentional killing committed in the heat of passion sufficient to cause an ordinary person to act in an irrational manner. That's distinguished from just the defendant when you have a self-defense thing, you have to consider this. The proclivity for violence of the deceased, if known to the defendant, can be taken into consideration in determining the reasonableness of his application of force to the situation. Now, here's the thing. This is an interesting conjecture, and I hate to do it, but it's a learning illustration. If the officer had worked for this guy, it says, for 12 years with the deceased, there may be something about, oh, I know what his proclivities are. I got to really keep him down, so you might take some more excessive measure to keep down somebody you know is capable of applying violence. See, I'm not saying that defends anybody, but I can see such a thing being applied when and if such a thing goes to trial.
Okay. Let me say something, Judge, and everybody on the panel. I just coming in late. I was trying to get in on this thing because I was talking to both you and Bishop earlier. So I want to say something here. Okay. One thing about it, this reminds me slightly of a COINTELPRO intelligence operation. They got pictures of this, of a police officer hitting, I mean, starting the fires and burning the police station and in other aspects doing things. So a lot of people are getting blamed for stuff they didn't even start. Number two, the officer Chauvin, if you look at his last name, this guy is Jewish. You can look at that. But the main point about it is, if we feel the target, what are you protesting for? This Black Lives Matter is involved in this. We need to be aware Black Lives Matter is a pro-gay transgender advocacy group. Last night, I'm looking at the TV. You got this punk Don Lemon on TV bringing a gay transgender man. Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton comes. It's trouble. Why is it always the same players, Crump and Al Sharpton? This is going to be a civil case, and Al Sharpton ain't about Justin. Al Sharpton is an FBI informant. That's all he is. He's a piece of scum.
Ooh.
You got that sorry, despicable Barack Hussein Obama today comes out and says he didn't deserve this. Well, guess what, Barack Obama? In 2015, you passed the law for Blue Alert to militarize police. So how hypocritical is
this? Right.
Somebody talked to me today on my phone and told me that, man, this ain't never happened. I said, wait a minute. We had 258 black men get killed in 2015 under Barack Obama's administration. How dare you tell me that this is something new? This ain't new. It's been going on, and if they don't stand up and fight back, that's on them. Judge is exactly right. You got the right to be armed. Like I said, if somebody wanted to hurt that officer, they should have did it. I'm tired of black men standing and watching and not fighting back. If you feel you're being targeted, fight back. You fight back and kill us. Didn't Super Soldier tell you that in 1992 when Bill Clinton had to say something about it? You fight back. You don't just be no proverbial punching bag all the time. That's not right. That don't make no sense. That's what now I'm saying.
That's right.
It's not gonna go anywhere. Listen. Al Sharpton just said tomorrow they're going to do marches. I'm in here in Richmond, Virginia today. Daggone, they talking about having a Black Lives Matter march. I'm saying, do you know, they're acting like they're helping you, but Black Lives Matter is trying to push their gay agenda to you. That's why that was the thing with Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton's a minister. Nobody talks about this degeneracy. Why would Al Sharpton hand the microphone to a transgender black man? That doesn't even make sense. They are advancing their agenda, and we don't even understand how much we are being played with the Black Lives Matter movement. If you feel that you are the aggrieved, you are the one that fight back. Stop letting every other group get in because they're going to front off it. They are advancing their cause, too. So even with the COINTELPRO type situation I'm talking about, you're going to get people blamed for something with agent provocateurs. And that's why I'm saying, when you don't have no organized movement You can't point out who is a provocateur of the movement. That's what happened in the 60s. That's what happened in Ferguson. It happened in Baltimore. You got some people in George Soros who fund Black Lives Matter. And think about this. You got a white hungering Jew funding a Black Lives Matter movement. And anybody that doesn't believe what I'm talking about, go right on Black Lives Matter website, and you will see that they talk about advancing the rights of trans and gay.
All right.
That's a fact.
You haven't told any lie.
No, he's 100% right. He's 100% right.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that a guy like George Soros, and just to give an aspect of him, this is the one thing that, the first thing I learned about George Soros, maybe about 30 years ago, here was a guy who was actually trying to legalize heroin across the globe, which to me immediately took me aback. But then as I started to see all the progressive things in which this guy was funding and the money in which he was giving, and then when I found out everything it is that I found out about him that just seemed wrong, and then to know that in 2007, after the announcement of his presidency, his presidential candidacy, Barack Obama, that he was actually meeting with and being advised by pro and affiliated Soros groups. And that was immediately when I took it back and I just said, not this guy. Just not. Just no. And I used to make this argument all the time, about Barack Obama, and as you were just saying earlier, about Barack Obama, people kept talking about hope and change. And somebody who asked me whether or not I was supportive of him, and I said no. And they said, well, don't you want change? And my response to them was a simple one. I almost call it a 9-year-old's response. I said, you know what? Not all change is good. And they go, what do you mean? Change is always good. I said, your mother died yesterday. Did that change make anything better? So don't sit around here and tell me the change is good.
Look, excuse me.
Let me say this, because I would like to see one change being made, and I think this one change will probably drastically change the landscape of what's going on. I think maybe police officers actually need to be able to be sentenced to the same sort of criminal action as John Q. Public, meaning if you kill somebody, you go to jail for murder, you go to jail for murder in general population. I think if a couple of cops wound up in general population in prison, that would send a message across the board to all cops to immediately think twice about what they are doing.
Let me add a point here about that. We have to understand something about how this system works, this political system works. There'll never be a day that government would allow that to happen. There won't be a day unless we make it happen. What we need to do now is really to step away from the moment and look at a solution to the situation. Because what we're doing now, we rehashed it with Eric Gardner, almost exactly a same situation. One was choked out with a chokehold, and the other one was naturally the neck and the back and all that type of thing. So basically the same basic situation. We go through it, we get upset for a moment, then everything dies down, and then till the next time, and we go do it over and over and over again. No resolution, nobody changes, because the system, all they do is wait us out. They wait us out. All this rhetoric and hoopla and boom, 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 and all of this. Give me 3 weeks, all this will be gone. The conversation's going to be over and everything. We have to stop allowing ourselves to let it continue without doing something to stop it from happening. Tonight, as a community,
I think we have some very good commentary today, and it's all on point, and everything is a valid consideration. I like this.
Go ahead, Bishop. I didn't know what I was doing. I heard somebody talk. Okay. But the first thing I say is we need to unite against injustice. Another thing we need to do is to remember that no one's going to think any more of us than we think of ourselves. If black lives don't matter to us, how can we expect black lives to mean anything to anybody else?
That's the first point. Second point is
that's
we need
true.
To organize ourselves in order to come up with a black agenda that speaks to the specific needs of our people. We need to get together of all different spectrums, every age group, gender, a profession, need to come together. There are basic things. There are things that we disagree on. That's true. No doubt about it. Approaches are disagreeable. But there are basic things. That's what the Civil Rights Movement did. That's what Martin Luther King did with his organization. They said, okay, this is what we want. Every black citizen deserves, this is what we want to move our people to. Whatever divisions, whatever methods were contrary to one another, they put that on the back burner for a minute in order to deal with specific issues that the black community needs to address and needs to change. That's what we need to do here. Until that happens, nothing's going to happen. Until that happens, nothing's going to happen. Then we have to take power to power, like Judge Brown was saying. We need to take power to power. Martin Luther King didn't just march. He went to President Lyndon Baines Johnson. He went to the senators and congressmen. He went and preached and taught in churches and public institutions. He took the word out. They had a plan, a systematic plan. Yeah, they had sit-ins. They had protests. They had marches. They had all those things, but that was only one aspect of it. They also had a political agenda. And because of their political connections and their political influence, Civil Rights Act of 64, the Voting Rights Act of 65, the Fair Housing Act of 68 were enacted and became law. That's what we need to do. Somewhere along the way, we become complacent with a little bit of crumbs that we eat from the table, and we have lost the fight. We should have continued the fight and not let there be such a law. There's been virtually a 50-year law
status
between Martin Luther King and us. 50 years. 50 years of doing virtually
social status
to perpetuate what he did.
We got to get Judge in office. We got to bring Judge out of retirement and get him in office somewhere.
Well, Bishop, this is Brother Bernard. I was talking to you earlier, and I was saying, and I told you everything I was expressing. And I said, I am tired of marching. I'm saying, listen, I told you earlier today that if Barack Obama was Jim Jones re-being Donna right there is laid dead for believing that fool. You got this, a lot of people in this thing going on. That's why I always say, when you see Al Sharpton, the same players, the players don't change. I'm shouting about marching and praying and all that. That's not going to do nothing. I was listening to CNN last night. Chris Cuomo said right up there and asked the lady right there on TV, when the cameras go away, who cares if the cameras go away? The cameras go away. That don't mean you stop what you're doing. Something else going to happen. They're going to bring up another situation. Look, you got protests going on in Louisville, Ohio. You mean to tell me this is the only thing that they want me to stay glued to the TV on this one case? You got thousands. This goes on every day. So I don't understand why they're going to have you hooked up on this, and then we're going to miss something else that's going on. Like, there might be an explosion. Like, I mean, this has no good, no nothing in this conversation whatsoever. Really, to tell you the truth, by the way, I'm in Facebook jail again for a comment I made today, right? And so they're trying to challenge me.
Don't repeat the comment.
Okay. I'm not going to repeat the comment. But what I'm saying is a lot of things that are going on. So we just can't worry about this particular instance because we got to worry about it, but this instance, you need to find out who are the provocateurs. That's why when you have these chaotic movements like this, you like Virginia Beach tomorrow, Norfolk, Virginia, Richmond, you have a chaotic movement. Who are the leaders? Because that's what happened in Ferguson. A lot of people, Darren Seals, and you had four or five other black activists that were out there protesting. They got burned in their cars because you got too many snitches and agents cramping in, and Black Lives Matter is part of a COINTELPRO intelligence operation, and George Soros is not the only. Huh?
No, no, I was adding on the false flag movements, those false flag propaganda.
Yeah, that's why I'm sitting there looking today on my, somebody posted this on, they're saying on social media that come here and you drive down the 5 hours to Minneapolis. If you're getting flagged on the internet, you need to have this meeting. You don't need to put that out there to invite people to come there to do that. You, if you can do this, do it organized, not because when things are chaotic, you don't know who's in the movement with you for real. You got whites.
But we live in a society.
I just want to figure out how come those leaders never stopped all those people from rioting like they were. This is L.A.
Yeah. Hey, L.A. I'll tell you why they didn't stop
them. They brought in troops. They brought in
troops. No, I'll tell you why they didn't stop them. The same reason why Miriam Bowser, I apologize, not Miriam Bowser, she was the mayor of Baltimore. So the same reason why that woman didn't allow the police department to interact with the protesters in Baltimore. The new ideal is that these people who are protesting because of their outrage should be allowed to destruct until they're tired. That they have earned, through their anger, an opportunity to show their grievances and to destroy public property and to commit crimes so they don't all steam. There's a progressive movement within our politics that say, hey, listen, they deserve this. You know, shelter in place, all the rest of the people, and those people who are outside wilding out, we'll tell the police department back off and let them just destroy the city. And when they're done, when they let out the system, we'll come back and we'll tax them too far so that we can rebuild
exactly.
That's exactly.
So why can't you just stop going to the stop going to those places of business and spending your money? You're gonna cause the harm. Like we had the riots here in Cleveland back in the 60s. You know, some of those places were never rebuilt and people are living in poverty in those areas right now. I lived in that area. I grew up in that area. I remember the National Guards there, and I was a little girl, and how scary it was to see them and worrying about my father, whether or not that he was going to make it home safe because they had martial law. I mean, why do we want to repeat this type of history?
Right, and my big concern is that this could be used to justify some uglier things like, you know, crime predictive software with facial recognition being installed everywhere, and you know,
they're already doing that.
But they already have it here where I live at in Detroit and up the road in Chicago. And you know, now you're looking at a pseudo version of martial law being declared with the National Guard coming in. Once National Guard comes in, martial law is like, it's like a hop, skip, and a jump down the street. It's like the next, you know what I mean? It's like the next stop on this train.
Doc Inky, I hate to cut you off on one thing. And also, what's that Somalian woman? Omar, that's her name? There's a tweet out by her that said her daughter, 17-year-old daughter, actually had a campaign to give those rioters or rebellers supplies. So she's part of that progressive movement too. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, why didn't any of these so-called black leaders, the white mayor of Minnesota came out the other day? But none of these black leaders came out until almost the guy was arrested. You got Gayle King on TV talking about, a fraud. Yes, exactly, Gayle King. You got Don, the fraud limit.
Gayle is me.
Don Fraud. Yeah, Don Fraud Lemon talking. And then I'm like, where is everybody? I mean, come on. Like, I mean, I'm not saying, I don't care if the white man comes out and says it, but I'm saying he should have had some black people. Omar, you are in that district. You are in Minnesota. Where is everybody at? I mean,
you know, the part that I don't understand is that if you watch any one of these media outlets. Minneapolis is a considerably progressive, liberal city. But you got those guys you mentioned, the Chris Cuomos and the Don Lemons and the Ilhan Omars. That city is progressive enough to elect Ilhan Omar. That city is progressive enough to elect Barack Obama. That city is enough to elect Keith Ellison, a Muslim, in that town. But for some odd reason, the violence and the racism in that town is Donald Trump's fault, and that town didn't even vote for him. I'm like, are you kidding? That don't make no sense to me.
Well, listen, I told somebody about that. I said, a guy told me, man, he got on me today on Facebook. I said, look, brother, Donald Trump is one person. It's a whole lot of people at play here. So I ain't worried about him so much. This been going on for a long time, and I just sick and tired of people. Oh, crap. No. How about this? You get on, I'm going to the range tomorrow. You get on.
Well, here's the thing. I agree with Reese because I feel like they keep throwing Trump out there. And then I actually had an older brother hit me up this morning and say, hey, man, we need to go ahead and rock the vote. You know, black folk got to rock the vote. We got to get Trump up out of there. I said, are you nuts? If we got to pinpoint any politicians as being contributory to this thing here, we got to look at Biden and Clinton and Hillary, and that's the group that if we could raise the blame on anybody, we got to get black folks out there to vote Republican this go round here. We got to make
Joe
sure
Biden,
Hillary, and nobody associated with Biden and Hillary actually come close to office. We don't even want their associates.
Joe Biden put police in black neighborhoods through that crime bill when he authorized and also brought community policing.
Wait, but don't forget the terminology which contributed to. Remember what Judge was saying to us the other day? He said that, you know, there's a certain outlook that the officers have when they're in the communities, whether it's right or wrong, it's just the truth. So we can't forget the super predator. Was that super predator Hillary came up with?
That's correct.
That contributes to the sort of outlook that, you know, you're dealing with monsters every time you're dealing with, you know, black men or, you know, like. We gotta make sure that if we're gonna rock the vote, we have to wake up to who the Democrats really are. We have to pull that mask off of them, because there's a lot of confusion when it comes to black folks in terms of when situations like this happens. Who do we pinpoint as to, you know, these things have a paper trail. We can actually look at the paper trail and see whose name is signed at the bottom of these bills. Who's actually reinforcing some of these things
brother,
that are playing out this
but
way.
But we don't know that.
Let me say this. Black folk know about the record of Biden. But we know about Hillary. We were there. I mean, people act like this is all in a vacuum or something, that this is like a state, is like another world or something that we live in. These people have been this way since the 70s, 80s, 90s. But I remember when Biden stood up there in the Senate and said he wants to cut Medicare, Medicaid, and veterans benefits. I was there. I remember it well. I remember when he stood against Anita Hill in doing the Clarence Thomas hearing. I remember the time that he talked about busing. I remember this, and it's being played all over the place. Go to YouTube if you don't want to read nothing. Play it easy. Go to YouTube, and it'll show you every speech he's ever made. Every single one. It'll show you why he was in the Ukraine as vice president and held $1 billion over the heads of the Ukrainians until they fired the prosecutor. The same thing that Trump was accused of in an impeachment, Joe Biden did. Come on, we're not ignorant. We knew about Hillary.
Bishop.
We still voted for her. 82% voted for her. 90% voted for Biden. We could bet your bottom dollar. I'm not going. You better say that now. I ain't going.
Hold on, everybody. Hold on. We are 8 minutes. I'm going to officially wrap the show, but I am going to attempt to go around and get your final thoughts regarding today's show, and then we will take it into overtime and just talk until the clock runs out. And, Judge, I need you to address the third-degree murder, manslaughter, or else we're going to have to do it in a separate session because I have to put that in the final edit. I want you to break it down versus
First degree.
There's first degree murder, which is intentional and deliberate murder. It used to be wanton and premeditated murder with malice aforethought. It's intentional and deliberate murder. In other words, you intend to murder somebody, you planned it out, you carry it out. Second degree murder is something that happens spontaneously in the heat of passion. Voluntary manslaughter is something that happens in the heat of passion, but the passion is sufficient to cause anybody to act like that. Then you've got criminally negligent or reckless homicide, some places have. What you have when you've got this scheme in this state where they have murder third degree, they're embracing a combination of variously manslaughter, criminally negligent, or reckless homicide. In other words, you do something absolutely reckless that is against the law, that becomes third degree murder. If you do something negligent to the point where it is beyond civil negligence, just way out there, it becomes criminally negligent homicide. See, so
my question was why was he charged with first, third versus
he didn't go out there planning to I'm gonna find me somebody that just happens to have something I can arrest them for and I'm going to kill them. That'd be pretty hard trying to prove that. So what you have is his circumstances led to what he's doing, so it's not first-degree murder. It's not a situation where he developed suddenly the intent to kill and killed. It's something he did that he should not have been doing that led to the death. That's like vehicular homicide. You don't go out looking for somebody to kill. You just are operating the car going at 90 miles an hour in a 45 zone, and you hit somebody, you see. It's not that kind of murder. There are different degrees of homicide. You kill in war, that you get a medal for it. You kill in peace, you go to jail, maybe. Then there are justifiable homicides. See, all people kill. This is a common thing with humans. So this is murder in the third degree, which in their state is more akin to manslaughter, rather than it is for intentional, I'm going to kill this person. It is doing something intentionally that does not have the purpose of killing that results in somebody dying. That's the easy way to explain it.
The only reason I asked that is because I was listening to the attorney, and he said we expected the family's attorney, and they said we expected a first degree murder charge. We want a first degree murder.
Well, I have no way.
You want to see the other officer?
That would be a miscarriage of justice.
And they want to revise the charges to reflect the charges.
That would be a travesty to get a first degree murder out of what was shown on the video. There is no way.
Okay.
That's just rhetoric, and it's I think that's irresponsible rhetoric in the first place.
Gotcha.
That's not appropriate to a professional.
So you could address the
that's
thing
not appropriate to a professional to say something like that.
Gotcha.
That is not
all
appropriate.
Right.
I don't agree with that.
Yes, sir. And just so you know, your friend Benjamin Krupp is the person who I got that quote from.
I understand that. I know exactly who you're talking about. I do not think that's appropriate. And look,
gotcha.
I have known a lot of lawyers that I said, come on up here. What in the world is the matter with you? Have you lost
it?
You know, you don't do that. See, that's hype, but I would do respect to the good brother. He's conscientious, but I think you need to see how stuff like that can backfire on you later on, and sometimes what you do and you get away with right now has a way of coming back 5, 6, 7, 10 years later, and it bites.
Yes, sir. So at this time, we have 3 minutes officially, and I'm going to attempt to get final thoughts from today's panelists, and hopefully the clock, when it runs out, it will give us...
One little comment on this. This little news flash about these two, the victim and the person charged, knowing each other for about a decade, working in the same facility for 10 years, 12 years, that might add a new element to the thing. But right now, see, that's the danger of speculating on facts you don't know to be facts, other than somebody running his mouth off as an allegation. Now, let me say that. The lawyer for the group may be right on point if he has knowledge of a set of facts that's not necessarily known to the public that he may be able to put to use, if he can prove it in a civil matter where he would have the burden of proof, not the other side. Okay?
Yes, sir. All right, so I am just going to go in the order you were introduced. You have about a minute and a half, and I cannot guarantee when Blog Talk will shut us off, but we're just going to keep talking. All right. Okay, so Dr. Inke, I called you in second. What would you like to say?
Man, I think today's call was nutritious. Like, it was just so many takeaways. I think think people thinking before they vote. I think thinking before you act, self-accountability. And the last piece, I wanted to kind of mix it up with Judge a little bit more and kind of dig into that new piece of evidence, because I think that might play out, that might wind up being the thing that gets the officer absolutely convicted, or maybe getting him off, because if they do have a prior relationship, also lead to maybe thinking that maybe this could have been premeditated if they had a sour relationship or things, you know, there was some animosity from them working together or whatever the case may be. You know, best friends become strangers, and, you know, people don't get passionate and angry with people that they don't know, you know what I'm saying? So that could work in his favor or against him. I think that's going to be real interesting to see that play out.
I see that as an avenue that they're going to go down. I would be remiss if a journalist worth their salt during the investigation didn't ask if that was being pursued. Because, again, I think, and if according to the report is correct, they worked together for a year as security guards. Is that correct?
They apparently have possibly been working together for up to 10 years.
Holy crap.
You know, that's a whole new dynamic right there. That's a whole new situation.
What the report says is that the cop worked security outside of the nightclub, which the owner had for 12 years before he sold it, and the deceased worked as security inside the club.
Mm. See, that's a relationship. They have to work in concert to some degree.
In fact, the case. The man puts his name out there as the owner of the club. So it is what it is, but everything has to be taken with a grain of salt.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, but if to assume that, you know, if it's true and these individuals worked there for that amount of time, I mean, I've not worked in the clubbing business or the restaurant business, if you will, but I am led to believe, for many of you are, that security at an establishment kind of coincide. In other words, these work closely or have a close-knit relationship together.
I've been a bouncer at bars. I've been a bouncer at after-hours spots, and I've been a bouncer in clubs. And I don't think there's a possibility of them working the same door, one outside the door, one inside the door, and not having a hot or a cold relationship. You know, the Bible says, lukewarm, I spit you out. So I don't think that these guys, if in fact they have a decade of a relationship, that relationship, something must have went wrong in that relationship, because when you look at the video, neither one of them seems to address each other on a personal level, at least not that we can tell from the video that I've seen. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be that. This is probably going to be the biggest monkey wrench in this whole case, if that's the case.
Other thing, too, is cause of death. As I mentioned earlier, putting a knee down there to block one carotid artery process is not going to kill somebody, but that person who comes in later puts the knee to his back, that could be what killed the person whose oxygen intake to the brain has become compromised. That could be what it's all about.
And
now,
that's, you know what?
Well, let me ask you this, Judge. We're still on this subject. Hold on, Judge. Let me,
under the law for being charged.
Right, but see, so now hold on, Judge, because what I'm saying is wouldn't that just add one more guilty party as opposed to getting them off? Like, wouldn't
in
that
other words,
no.
Everybody would be acting and caught in the mess.
Right.
Okay. Theoretically, if they found there was some intent on that, everybody that joined in could be part of a felony murder if there was some kind of animosity resulting in retaliation. But we don't know that. It'd be rank speculation right now to say that. But those are just possibilities, and I hate to do that because people get off into this inquiring minds want to know instead of peace and body. It's a great value.
But there's a great, you know, there's a great interesting point that you're making about this, about, you know, again, you know, people are looking at this from one particular aspect. As you were talking about this earlier, Judd, you said, you know, the camera is fixated on the one thing that the cameraman in this case, and we'll use that term loosely, the cameraman in this case, what he's seeing to him is shocking. So, again, he's not taking a broad picture. He doesn't know that there's someone who's putting their leg down on his back. So they're not even capturing that because, of course, the person who's taken, the cameraman in this case, the thing that he sees is so shocking. It's like, wow, this police officer has his knee on his neck. He subsequently dies. Now, everyone has already formed an opinion. We've got none of the people who are watching have a medical degree. They have no medical, reportage to speak of. They're seeing that.
There was an
EMT
on site. He showed up later.
There was nobody on site, but everyone has already made the determination. And it's true. Even I made the determination. That knee to the neck caused his death. Until Judge Brown made that comment about somebody coming around to his back, which you know that no one is going to pay attention to. Because
well, no, no, no. Here's the counter argument. Well, listen, here's the counter argument. The counter argument, the real thing is both knees contributed because if either one of them had not put their knee there, then he would probably still be alive. So if there's a knee in the back but no knee on the neck, he's alive. If there's a knee on the neck but no knee on the back, he's alive.
We're always interested in what you have to say about our live broadcasts. Please share your comments on our Facebook page or websites.
The Judge Joe Brown Show, presented by Valerie Denise Jones. Uncensored truth with a legal twist. Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 929-477-1167. Or visit MissValerieDeniseJones.com for details. Want to know more about big media? Tune in every Tuesday and Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to subscribe to our channels.